You're listening to the Bragman Breakdown Podcast. Here's your host, Jackson Bragman.
Welcome in to episode 53 of the Bragman Breakdown Podcast. I am your host, Jackson Bragman. We have a very, very special guest joining us today. He is America's only registered world referee with the World Squash Federation, which is a very high honor. There are only about a dozen of those individuals in the world, the only one from the United States of America, one of the best referees in the world of professional squash. It is the one and only Mike Riley joining us today from the beautiful DoubleTree Hotel here in downtown Bluefield Hill. So, Mike, thank you for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thank you, Jackson. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here. It's always fun being at a squash event, seeing the best players in the world play. A lot of fun.
Absolutely. And speaking of that, Motor City Open going on this week. Already see some hectic matches that you've had. I know you reffed Omar Mossad and Ferris Dasuki last night, which was a very difficult, tough to match, very physical. So off to a very interesting start to the tournament. Then the quarterfinals are tonight, so you've got a couple matches coming up this evening as well. I want to ask you, starting off with this, what would you say is the biggest kind of misconception that players and fans have about your job? Because referees, especially in the world of squash, take a lot of flack because they are a big part of the game. So what would you say is the biggest like misconception that people have about what you do and what your job is?
That is a tough question. For me, myself, the biggest misconception that most players have is that I never played the game, which unfortunately a lot of the referees haven't played at a reasonable level. I like to think that I was fairly decent as a player, and so understand the game fairly well, and has also been a coach of the sport for the last 46 years. Like I say, I feel like I know a lot about the game. I think a lot of the referees that get into it do play a little bit of squash, but to the standard that's not very competitive or understand the game as well.
Right, and especially for a guy who didn't pick up squash till you were a little bit older, you were like late teenager by the time you started playing. So you weren't a junior when you were growing up in Manchester, and you did start playing. So, but at the adult level, you've played like a good amount of league squash, and now based in Rhode Island, you've done quite a bit of coaching over there. So I would like to think that you have quite a bit of experience, and obviously have reffed. How many matches do you think you've reffed over the years?
That's impossible to track. I started refereeing the Tournament of Champions as a professional referee in 1991. So I've been doing the professional tournament for 31, 32 years. At one stage, I was doing four events a year and probably doing 20 matches at each event.
That's quite a lot, yeah.
It was back then because there was very few of us.
Right.
And we actually had the players do some matches, and I'd help out and fill in when they decided not to show up for their session.
Right.
So it's tough to know, but it's probably in the thousands of matches that I've done over the years. But we also, when we played league in Manchester, we refereed every match. So refereeing a squash match after you'd played in the league was not that big a deal. So I felt like I transitioned into it a little bit easier than a lot of people do, which was fortunate for me at the time, as it gave me an opportunity to go watch some great squash as well.
Yeah.
And sit in a great seat.
Right. Obviously, the refs do have the best seat in the house. That is, there's no doubt about that. Especially last night, we kind of have like a little mezzanine at the BAC for the Motor City Open. You guys are front and center, right up top, and looking down on the players. Who pointed that out to me last night? One of the journalists there covering the event was saying it's kind of funny because the players are down, they're playing on the court. You're up 10 feet in the air or higher looking down on them, and you make a call. They're looking up at you. It's like you're God. They're like begging you, please, God, please. So it was kind of like a funny thing to think about. It's something else interesting. I do remember speaking to you a few times in the past, not at length, but in, you know, at this event when you've come in the past. And something that you said that resonated with me was that the biggest compliment you've ever received, not that you're a great ref or that you have accomplished so much throughout your career, but former world number one and world champion Jonathan Power once said, in reference to you, "I think Mike's really fair." So why did that compliment mean so much to you from one of the all-time great Canadian squash players?
Well, it kind of did resonate to me because I'd never really had a compliment or a positive comment from any of the players. You know, they'd usually just, if they did anything, they'd look up and wave and say thanks. But Jonathan was the first person that I saw the comment in print. I think it was in the Globe in Toronto, and I thought that was really nice of him to say so.
Right. And refereeing is kind of a thankless job. I don't know if you would agree with that in a lot of senses, because when you ref a great match, no one's there to congratulate you after, you know, great call or great match, but everyone's all over you when you have a rare mishap. So what's that like, being under so much pressure every single match, and then you have to, your accuracy rate has to be, you know, well above 95% to be considered one of the best referees in the world, which is certainly what you are. So how do you kind of deal with that pressure on a nightly basis when you're here at these tournaments?
A lot of sleepless nights.
Yeah, I'm sure that that some of the players that feel they've been robbed are kind of like, I hope that he's up all night thinking about that one. So I'm sure that you, to be doing it as long as you have been, that you kind of can't stress about it too much, because then, like you said, you'll be up all night.
Yeah, I mean, I have had sleepless nights over certain situations, because I know how difficult it is to be down there, to be told that you're not capable of getting that ball, or you wouldn't have made that shot. That's very frustrating on both levels, but I resolve that by the fact that I'm not making as many mistakes as they are. I mean, that finally came to me after about 20 years of watching squash and refereeing squash, is that they do make more errors than I do.
Right. As good as these guys are, their kind of accuracy level is even, you know, for what they do is almost lower than what you do. So that's, you know, very good kind of observation or takeaway to have. I want to read to you, this is 5 years old, I was just doing some digging before this interview, on Reddit. Are you familiar with Reddit as a platform?
I am not.
Okay. So it's kind of like a social media. It's like Twitter, basically. Okay. And it's like people go on there to complain, do whatever, like joke around. People like post links and all sorts of stuff. So, random guy on Reddit, I want to get your reaction to this. On you. His voice always sounds drab, monotone, and uninterested. I feel like it seriously dampens the atmosphere. This, of course, besides the fact that, in my opinion, he has the worst judgment out of all referees. So what is your reaction? Because I'm sure that's not like the first negative kind of comment that you've heard over the years. So what's like your reaction when you kind of hear something like that?
Well, I actually did hear that because somebody reposted it on Facebook or sent me the link, and I did read it, and I can't really say kindly what I thought of his comments. Obviously, he wasn't. I really don't know what to say about that. But you know, that's just like everybody has their own opinion about certain things. And I really don't know what to say about that.
Right, you just gotta kind of shrug it off, and yeah, can't really worry about it too much. I will say that. As we talked about earlier, reffing is kind of like a thankless job, and there are a lot of difficult aspects that go into it. What do you think is the single hardest part about being a professional squash referee?
I think the thing that I don't enjoy watching or looking at is when the guys get injured. That to me is too traumatic. Making a decision, you've only got a 30% chance of getting it right. There's only really three decisions, but when there's injuries involved, there's a lot of stuff that goes on that I don't like to have to deal with. It's certainly not one of my strengths. But that's basically it. is the injury rules.
The injuries.
And they've changed so many times over the past 30 years, it's tough to keep track, really.
Right. So what are your, like, kind of thoughts on dealing with that? Has there ever been a time when you maybe didn't award someone, like, an injury timeout because you didn't, you know, because they wanted one and you didn't, and you had to make, you, do you have to make tough decisions like that a lot of time, or is it usually pretty blatant when you're deciding whether or not a player is actually hurt or not?
Yeah, I mean, once there's blood involved, and the most difficult thing in my mind is viewing whether the person was hit with the racket, usually from being 60 feet away in the, you know, in the stands in the larger events. See whether it was intentional or self-inflicted, and then the rules determine how much they get as injury time. Obviously, if blood's involved, they have unlimited time, or they did in the past. Now they've kind of cut down on that a little bit. So that's the toughest thing. Determining whether it's a let or a stroke or a no let is, you know, fairly simple in comparison.
Right.
In my mind.
Yeah. At this point, obviously, you're not going to ref very many perfect matches. However, do you think that you've kind of got it down to a science after doing it for so many years that you can almost, like, go through the motions and you've seen it all, so you know every single, like, scenario, what you would call? Or would you say it's still kind of up in the air and you're a little bit unsure based on the situations that you might see on the court and on any given night what type of calls you're going to make?
Yeah, I think the game's certainly shifted in the direction that it was being played in the 70s and early 80s. It went away in the 80s, 90s, and 1000s to where there were just too many lets. And fortunately, the PSA have cleaned it up. The players have accepted the way the game should be played, and it's a lot cleaner now. We've probably dropped, you know, from an average of 50 decisions a match to sometimes less than 20, which is great. It's great for the crowd. It's great for the referees. It's a very simple game. You hit the ball, you get out of the way. You're in the way, you lose the point. A lot of us still see a lot of the referees still see the game slightly differently, and we all call it slightly differently. I like to feel that I am fair. Sometimes you hear, oh, that was a makeup call, and I've never felt that I've ever done that. You know, I make each decision based on the results that were happening on the court at that time.
Right, and that's...
And there's no such thing as, that's exactly the same. You know, you get the players turning around saying, oh, that was exactly the same as you just gave me a stroke, now you're giving me a let. In my mind, there's no situations that are the same.
Right. And rarely will you see, like, two situations that are exactly the same, the ball's in the same spot, the opposing player's in the same exact spot on the court, let alone two or three rallies apart. Is it the likelihood of that happening is so slim, so obviously that makes a lot of sense. Right now, in the overarching world of pro squash, there's so much kind of competitive at the top of the PSA rankings right now. You have Ali Farag, who's the world number one, has been for quite a while. You have Paul Coll, who's guaranteed to be the number one player in the world come March. And then you have someone like Mohamed Al-Shabagi, who has spent the last decade, the majority of the last decade, as the number one player in the world. Got a sneaky Egyptian like Asal, who at 20 years old has crept up in the top five of the world rankings already. At the end of 2022, who do you think will be at the top of this very competitive leaderboard in pro squash?
I certainly think it will be Asal. I think he's great for the game. He's flamboyant. I think that's what the game needs. And he's very entertaining. Certain people don't like his antics. It doesn't bother me at all. You see much worse things happening on other sports. But I think for squash, it needs a bit of excitement. It's getting some coverage in magazines and newspapers that it wouldn't normally. So I think that's great for the game.
Yeah. What else do you think the PSA, not necessarily, maybe not the PSA, but what do you think the game of squash needs moving forward to give it some more life and to expand and grow the game as we move into kind of a new decade of the 2020s. Obviously, people have been upset that squash hasn't been in the Olympics. People are upset that such a great game that we all know and love, like pro squash, isn't more of a global game. It's a very global game, but it's not as big of a game as certain other racket sports like tennis, or maybe like, you know, racquetball was, not so much anymore, but several decades ago. So what do you think squash needs moving forward to continue to grow and become a bigger sport around the world?
Well, I, you know, personally, I don't really think it's doing anything wrong. The biggest issue in the past was there's not enough people that have access to squash courts. That's really not changed a whole lot. It's getting better in this country for sure. And I think this is going to be a big mover and a shaker for facilities. There's more urban programs coming through now, so there's a lot more kids that are out there that wouldn't normally get a chance to play in a private club. So I think that's a great improvement. One of the biggest misconceptions, I think, is that the problem with the game of squash is it looks too simple. And unfortunately, the guys are such fabulous, and the women too, fabulous athletes, that they make it look simple. And I don't think that appeals to too many people, unless you've actually played it, which, once again, it means getting people out there on the court. To not many people I've ever come across that have tried squash have given it up. Yeah. They play it, they love it, they stick to it. And it's a game for life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mike, I want to thank you for your time today. You've been awesome, and thank you for having me come to the hotel and spend a few minutes with you. Before I let you get out of here, though, I do want to hit you with some rapid-fire questions. Is that all right?
Okay.
Okay. First, the Australian Open is this evening. I don't know if you'll be watching, because here in the U.S. it'll be in the very early hours of the morning, but who do you like tonight, Rafa or Medvedev?
I the only person I know there is Rafa. I don't follow tennis anymore since Borg and McEnroe stopped playing. I haven't been interested in it, so it's not a question for me.
Okay. All right, fair enough. I just kind of read that you were a big tennis guy, but doesn't follow sport anymore.
Court tennis.
Oh, okay. Oh, so like paddleball?
No. Court tennis is the original game of tennis, played indoors, played in France, England, America, and Australia. And it's lawn tennis or regular tennis that's being played in Australia today is a new game in comparison.
So how does it differ from, like, the OG, like, indoor version of tennis that you're referring to?
It is played indoors. It's played off walls. It's played with a very heavy ball, the covering of which is exactly the same as a regular tennis ball, but it's hand-stitched by the professionals of the clubs. It's played with a completely asymmetric racket, and the two sides of the court are completely different. And you only serve from one side of the court.
Oh, so it's not like tennis where both sides are, you know, where it's symmetrical down the middle. Okay, that's very interesting. I'm going to check that out, definitely. Yeah, that sounds interesting. Okay, what is the longest match that you've ever reffed in your career?
Not more than 100 minutes. I actually can't remember who it was, but I know I'd done one over 100 minutes, and it was back in the earlier days when it was scored to 9.
Right. But you can only win points off your serve, obviously, so it took a little bit longer. Yeah. So was there ever a point, though, at any of these matches, maybe it goes to like 90 minutes in the fifth game, and it's maybe 10 all, and you're just kind of sitting there.
Sweating.
Not only sweating, but you're like, all right, guys, I'm going to need to use the bathroom real quick. Just hold tight for a few minutes. I'll be right back.
Yeah, fortunately, that's not happened. I mean, there's been some tense moments. And, I mean, you come to the stage where you know that if it's, you know, 8-all, 9-all in the fifth, that you're probably going to end up making the decisions for the next 3 or 4 points. Because the guys are just going to hit the ball up and down the wall until something pulls out and the other player can't hit it, and so the referee is going to make the decisions. That happens more than people realize.
Yeah, when those tight matches, because at that point, Adol, these guys are so, so good that they, mentally, that they can just lock in and really be like, I am not losing this point. I am not going to hit it out. I'm not going to hit the 10, and there's not going to be a ball that bounces twice before I get it back. And if you don't do any of those things, you're not going to lose the point. So it really comes down to the referee's discretion at that point. So that's, I hadn't thought of it from that perspective. However, that does make a lot of sense. What is the best comeback that you've ever had to a player that was maybe giving you a rough time? Because I've seen some good ones this week alone. I've heard like a couple good ones, but I'd imagine you maybe have a couple, you know, go-tos up your sleeve.
I think one of the best matches that I've seen is Gawad came back in the U.S. Open after being
down. No. I'm thinking like best like verbal comeback. Like if a player was
my favorite all time is from Rodney Isles at the Tournament of Champions in the early days, probably one of the first times in Grand Central. Was in the fourth or fifth game. I think he was playing Jansha, and I asked him, you know, Mr. Isles, would you like a let? And he came back and he said, no, I'd like to order some pizza.
Who is your favorite player to ref? Like the guy that gives you no problems, just smooth sailing throughout the match, it's not give you any issues, and has been kind of good to you throughout the years?
I think Ali Farag has always been the fairest of players. You know, there's a lot of guys behind him who I won't mention, but Ali's always been very fair and courteous. He doesn't always agree with what's going on in my mind, but he's always been very fair.
All right, well, Mike Riley, thank you very much for coming on the Bragman Breakdown podcast today, and best of luck for the rest of the week here in the Motor City Open.
Well, thanks, Jackson. Thanks for having me over here, and I appreciated you asking me, and thanks being able to talk about the game I love.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, thank you guys for listening, and we will see you guys next time.